This program is brought to you by Resonance 104.4 FM. If you like what you hear and want to support our work, please make a donation at fundraiser.resonance.fm.
Good afternoon, you're listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM and www.resonancefm.com on the net. And today's guests are Matthew Whiteside, composer, and accompanied by Naomi Belshaw from Wildcat PR. Good afternoon to you both.
Hello.
Hello.
Thank you for coming in. And it's on the occasion of Matthew releasing his second album, Entangled, String Quartets and Electroacoustic Responses to Physics and Sound Through Wind Chimes, Waves and Spooky Action Theory. So there's a lot to explain, but perhaps, perhaps first of all, Naomi, if you could, you work for a PR company?
Or? Yeah, that's right. Well, I work for Wildcat PR. We're right. a global creative agency, actually, and we have offices in Berlin, Paris, London, New York and LA. But I work in the London office, and we particularly like working with composers and artists and groups that are doing contemporary music. So that's everything from straightforward classical music right through to those people who are working in the contemporary realm writing new classical music. Mm. We work with conductors, we work with composers, and we've known Matthew for quite a long time, and we're really interested in his album project that he was doing. So we got discussing over a year ago about this whole idea.
More than a year ago,
it was maybe
actually.
2 years ago.
Yeah, it was whenever I first kind of...
So this project's been quite inspiring, and we were really interested in the idea of what it was putting together for the album, really wanted to work with him.
How does this work in terms of, do you approach Matthew, or did Matthew look for an agent, or what's the, how does this,
It's a mixture. I guess as a company, we're always making sure we're out there, out and about, seeing what's happening in the industry, and who is writing new music and doing interesting things out there. But there are various moments, conferences and other platforms and concerts you go to where you kind of see what everyone is up to and you end up talking about what everyone's projects are. And so it's a mixture of us being interested in seeing what might be interesting album or concert projects to work on, and composers or artists being interested in thinking about how they can raise the profile of what they're working
on
next.
So he doesn't sort of employ you as an agent as such? It's not like a kind of...
No, it's an arrangement where Naomi helps with arranging things like this, for example, around the release itself.
Right.
And helping raise my profile, getting reviews of the album, getting playlist placements and things like Spotify, Apple Music, and just generally trying to make people aware that the album exists, that my music exists, that it's you can go and listen to it and hopefully enjoy it.
Yeah.
So I suppose we work in different ways with different artists, and sometimes it might be for a specific campaign to help the launch of an album, or it might be more of an overall project working with somebody over a year and looking at their overall profile. So it varies from each person we're working with or each group we're working with.
Okay. So this is Entangled, which is your second album, and it's described, I think you say that is it self... No, it's your own label.
Yes. I have been self-releasing a lot of my music recently just because it gives me a bit more control over it, I feel. Okay. There are problems with doing it that way, but I think... Overall, because of the way the industry is in general, the availability of self-releasing, if you're a young composer or a young ensemble who wants to get their stuff out there, self-releasing is a very easy and economical way to do it and to raise your own profile.
But if you do it yourself, I suppose there are problems with distribution or raising. You need somebody like Naomi, I suppose, to get behind it. Otherwise, I mean, I find... From my own point of view, I've just published a book, and that is, unless you've got a distributor, unless you can place it somewhere, it's just going to, you know what I mean? It doesn't really get out there. It's quite a hard thing.
Yeah, from the distribution point of view, I think now for certainly streaming platforms, there are more ways to do that now.
Definitely.
But then I think it can be very important to kind of galvanise PR and use other things like that in order to raise the profile of the album coming out.
Right.
So you could get it to a distributor, but actually then making sure that people are listening to it as well, and it is getting streamed or getting on playlists. You want to employ someone to help with that, and that's there's a happy medium and you want to
and
work
with
people.
A lot of stuff that I've done as well in the past where, like my first album, I didn't employ a PR person around it, but I still got some reviews and stuff through my own efforts of reaching out to people, and it's been... got radio play, etc. So it's possible to do your own promotion and your own releasing. However, if depending on how your time gets balanced, because I also run a concert production company in Scotland, so it's trying to balance the time of producing concerts, trying to promote my own work, trying to write music, go to conferences, kind of go and see things, go to concerts, try and keep connected. It's that idea of almost not necessarily farming out of responsibility, but getting someone to help with everything, balancing everything. That the idea of it's something that isn't explored a lot in classical music, is the idea of building your team around you.
And so in pop music happens a lot, and people build a team to help you promote and do everything and get gigs and everything else. But in the classical world, people I think, need to start thinking more like that.
Yeah,
but it's
definitely.
I think it's okay. Still an area that's growing.
You both used the word industry twice, I noticed. Which, are you part of the music industry?
Yeah, it's a business.
Yeah.
Okay. It's classical music, yes. It's it's art music. It's often publicly funded, but it's still a business.
Right.
And people, especially, I think...
And is that industry, the general music industry that covers everything?
Yeah.
You're part of that?
We're all... A lot of the industry blogs that I read are pop music blogs, because what they're doing, I find very interesting in pitching to playlists, for example, which is something that composers do not do. Like, I create a I call it a weekly playlist, but I haven't had time to do it for the last month or so. Right. But a weekly playlist on Spotify, Apple Music, Deezer, etc. And I include music that I find interesting and enjoyable and program it like I would a concert, roughly an hour and a half long concert.
Right.
And then put it up on social media, tagging all the composers that are involved, on the ensembles, all the record labels. And quite often, they don't even like the tweet, for example. They're not trying to share their music and that. It feels like it's... They're not... Yeah, the way that I think of the playlist is putting together stuff that if someone comes to the playlist because they like my music, they might hear your music and then go and explore your music.
Yeah. Right.
So it's the idea of... It's an old phrase of the rising tide raises all boats. So if more people are aware of the interesting stuff that's going on through everyone feeding into the same angle...
You want to reach your audiences. So it's kind of, in the modern world, how do class composers reach their audiences? And, you know, the streaming platforms are an important part of that.
Definitely.
Okay, so this is called Entangled, this particular album.
Yeah.
And we played a track from it at the beginning, which was called Response 2, which that sounded more electro to me than acoustic. Is that fair enough to say?
Totally fair. That piece was a response to my quartet number 4, subtitled Entangled. And it was totally composed on the computer using a few samples from other things that I've got as a response coming out of Entangled. Because when I was putting together the album, I had quartet number 4, the Entangled quartet, as the central piece. And then I wanted to create an album around that in the more a concept album kind of idea. So you start off with quartet number 6, then there's a response 1, which responds to quartet number 6, but also brings you into quartet number 4. Then quartet number 4, then response 2 brings you out of quartet number 4 and brings you into quartet number 5, which finishes the album.
Right.
So you've got this through stream of different musical ideas that are joined up by the two responses.
Right.
But the two responses are totally electronic, whereas all the quartets are...
Oh, that's interesting. Okay.
...broadly acoustic. So quartet 6 and quartet 5 are totally acoustic. There's points of quartet 5 that a number of people have commented on sounded almost electronic, but because that's how I'm getting the players to play with the techniques that I'm getting them to do.
Yes, I noticed that. There are bits within them where you think, how is that sound being created? It doesn't sound entirely acoustic.
Quartet 5 is totally acoustic.
Right.
Completely acoustic. There is no electronic trickery going on, apart from the normal post-production, slightly EQing or changing the balance or whatever, but there's nothing beyond a normal string quartet recording would be going on.
I tried to throw out some... I was trying to search for influences. Listening to it, I'm thinking, where is this coming from? And I came up with some names like Webern and Schoenberg and other part. But the names you came up with, I've never heard of. Who are they? Who are these people you mentioned?
The composers that I would say I'm most influenced by at the moment would be people like Claude Vivier, Kia Sarriaho, and Gérard Grisé. Because of how they treat sound as kind of sonic objects is one way to think of it. I mean, they don't all think of it in that way, I don't think, but the way I take Grisé's compositional method, especially in a piece like Parcelles, which starts off with I think it's a B flat on a trombone, and then it's the orchestra, or the 18 players, the ensemble, orchestrates the spectrum of that trombone. So it sounds like the orchestra is coming out of that trombone note.
Right.
And then the piece morphs away from that, but it starts off with this very recognisable sonic object, which then which starts twisting into something else. Right. The technique, the way he talked about it, was the harmonic and inharmonic parts of the piece.
What generation are these composers? Are these your age, or are they?
No, they're older. No? Grise is.
I'm not familiar with.
Died about 15 years ago.
Okay.
Something like that. Right. Vivier died in the 80s, though he died when he was about 40, I think.
Right.
Well, died. He was murdered when he was 40.
Oh.
He had a very short and interesting life in Canada. He's a Canadian composer. Who was the story that I've heard is he was writing an opera about a composer being murdered by his gay lover. He was gay and he was murdered on the train by someone who is said to be his lover.
Wow.
Okay. So he was in the middle of writing that opera.
Wow.
And it's, okay.
I'm not entirely sure how true that is, but that's kind of one of those stories that you hear about him.
Indeed, yeah.
Sarajaho is a Finnish composer that's still alive and does a lot with strings and electronics.
Okay. When I mentioned Arvo Part, you that sort of struck a bit of a chord. There was an interesting synchronicity there, which is something I'm quite interested in.
Quartet 6. I didn't mean it to be inspired by Pert, but when I finished writing it and realised, oh yeah, that's kind of slightly Pertish, but then realised that I started the piece while I was in Tallinn, in Estonia, where Pert was born, essentially. So it was just a very weird combination of circumstances that this piece seems to have come out of a Pertian style of this Pertian sound world.
Yeah.
While I was in Estonia, so maybe there's just something about that country that.
Well, speaking of circumstances, we should perhaps get on to your to what you describe as spooky action theory and the Institute of Physics and your great uncle, John Stuart Bell.
Yeah.
Your great uncle, who proved quantum entanglement. Of which I know absolutely nothing. So now's your chance to educate me about what's going on here. This is Naomi might have to assist me with this line of questioning.
Yeah, I suppose I had an interesting moment when we were first getting together on this particular campaign and putting together our fact sheet, a kind of press release on this project, and I wanted to include some of the kind of quantum physics behind some of the quartet stuff
that
we were
really
writing.
Really weird.
But it is really, really weird to talk about. I mean, even the names, and actually we didn't think about it properly at the time, but obviously at the time that we were releasing, which was around Halloween, the fact that one of the tracks is called Spooky Action.
Yeah,
we should have really done more with that.
Because one of the reviews came back with like perfect music for an extended Halloween or something like that was the quote.
Yeah.
This was released on the 25th of October, and Halloween was. Why did we not think of that? But quantum physics is such a weird, weird area of physics. It's so fascinating. And physicists have heard say anyone that says they understand quantum physics doesn't understand quantum physics because it's just so abstract. So the idea, entangled. Is a reference to quantum entanglement, which is where two particles are created and they are said to be in a state of entanglement. Each particle has a spin, which is a 720 degree spin function, which can be read at whatever way you read it, which is the kind of particle detectors. But when you read it, it'll either be spin up or spin down. So spin up is the spin is within line with the reading. Spin down is not in line with the reading. But if the particle was at, say, 40 degrees from the particle detector, it would then average back to being spin up. But then after that particle has been read as spin up, it will stay as spin up when it's being read, whatever angle it's been read at again. The bit that becomes weird is that, when one particle is read as spin up, the other one will be read as spin down, if read in the same line.
Right.
Over any arbitrary distance, which seems to mean faster than light communication. Hence, spooky action is a quote from Einstein of going, this is spooky action at a distance. Mm. So the compositional way that I did that is that you hear the quartet doing chords, and when it was premiered in SARC in Belfast as part of the Northern Ireland Science Fest. It was commissioned by the Institute of Physics as part of the annual John Bell Lecture. The quartet played a chord, and then that chord sometimes went around the room and sometimes didn't. So you heard the quartet in person and then the electronic quartet as a delay. The reason it sometimes didn't is because if the Bell's theorem, which is what John Stuart Bell came up with as a way to test whether spooky action is actually communication, faster than light communication, or inbuilt information in the particles when they are created, that the experimental results from this test, which have been recreated, are if there is inbuilt information within the particles, they should be read differently. I think it's differently 55% of the time. But if they're not inbuilt particles, it's only 50% of the time. So 50% of the time, and that the 50% of the time is what experimentally has been proven now that we can do these tests. Yeah. In the 70s when, I think it was 70s or 80s when Stuart came up with this theorem, we weren't in a position to be able to experimentally test these, but now we can, and it's been proven that he was right. But what that shows is that there isn't inbuilt communication. Sorry, there isn't inbuilt information, but not necessarily that they're communicating faster than the speed of light.
No, I know I'm confused. But this was your great uncle, right? Yeah.
So the 50% of the time thing is that 50% of the time the quartet is delayed,
right?
And 50% of the time you don't hear anything. So it's got that quite.
Yeah.
So from a compositional point of view, it's kind of got that random slightly, I expected another delay there. No, I didn't. Yeah. So you're slightly playing with the expectations, but basing it on some...
Are you using it as a map or whatever, or a system, or is it a purely intuitive response to an idea? You know, are you using it like a, you know what I mean, like a process that you can actually...
I've used this kind of idea in another piece, actually. It was Always Ever Unknowable, which was commissioned by the Cottier Chamber Festival. That at the start of it, it starts with an aleatoric section, which is kind of more chance-based section. But if each of the performers gets given a cell of a set duration and told to repeat that a set number of times of that duration, and if they line it up perfectly, it will be the right response. There will be 50% of the time they will line up and 50% of the time they won't. So I've used that physics as a system in other pieces like that. With spooky action, that was more just a musical response to it, but based on knowing what I was going to do with the technology and then how I can do something interesting with the technology. The same was true with the other pieces. So waves and spinning. Spinning is a reference to spin. These are the other movements within quartet
number four. Quartet and four, yeah.
Spinning is a reference to the spin of particles, which I've already mentioned, which is also weird in its own right. Yeah. But waves is a dual reference to the musical waves, but also the wave-particle duality, which particles are both in waves and particles at the same time. So if you use the double slit experiment, if you shine light in, no, not light, sorry, particle gun at the double slit, you will see both particle. If you just fire one, it comes out as a particle, but if you start firing loads and loads, it starts becoming waves. It's really weird.
So you're seeing several things and at once.
Would a listener be able to detect that your music was somehow informed by such a theory, or does it just sound like...
I feel like it does. Like, I really think, for example, with quartet number four, the spinning movement, I really get a sense of something continually in motion and you're wondering where it's going. And, yeah, I really got a sense of that.
That's good. it's kind of... in a way, if you get that from it, or if you get the kind of where the physics coming from the piece, great. If you don't, great. I don't. Right. In a way, the pieces are not meant to communicate the abstract ideas of physics, because even in linguistic terms, that's nigh on impossible.
Right.
But they're just an artistic response to abstract concepts presented within physics. So if a listener listens and goes, great, I can hear that.
How did you first come across your great uncle's theory then? How did this happen?
It's one of those things that, as kind of family folklore, not folklore necessarily, but one of those things I've always been aware of. Yeah. He died when I was, I think, 3. Mm. I did meet him, but not properly meet him because I don't remember.
No.
But it's just one of those things that he's been there in the background of this. Mm. Our family has this great physicist who, if you talk to any physics people, know John Stuart Bell. Then I just started looking into his work a little bit more, getting more and more interested, and I've always just been interested in physics in general.
Okay. What did your father do? Is there a line here? Is there sort of a family trait or influence at work? I mean, did your father involved in a similar activity?
No.
So you've leapt a generation.
Yeah.
And you've kind of gone from grandfather to you. Great-uncle, actually.
Great-uncle. My grandfather was an engineer. Uh-huh. But... yeah, my parents weren't within the physics field at all. So
right.
My mum was an architect.
Okay.
So it's slight, that's more of an engineering side of things rather than a physics side of things.
Right.
But yeah, I think I just...
Okay. Should we play another track from Entangled?
Spinning.
That's track 5, which is the Entangled is basically 3 pieces, isn't it? It's 3
movements.
Right?
Three movements. Yes.
The first, waves, spooky action, and spinning. So spinning is the third of these. I'll try and find it on here. Doesn't want to work here.
Thank you.
was the third movement of Entangled, a three-movement piece that was called Spinning. And we were talking about, we mentioned the fact that there's an involvement with a film. Entangled is it's not exactly a film soundtrack, but...
When the Institute of Physics commissioned me, I thought it'd be really interesting to work with a filmmaker, Mirza Zanotti, on the piece as well. So the process behind that was I wrote the piece, and then she created the film for the piece.
Okay.
So it's more of a film with music rather than music with a film.
Right.
And...
What sort of film is it? Could you describe it roughly? I mean, is it an abstract film?
Yes, it's very abstract. She used a lot of animation and used a very... I think it was maybe a 20-second clip that she found from the early 1900s of two people dancing and morphed it into this 16-minute film to go with the quartet. So far, there's only Spooky Action is on my... Sorry, Spinning is on my YouTube. But on Monday the 2nd of December at 8 p.m, we're doing a YouTube premiere of the whole film. Right. So if you're interested, you can go onto my YouTube, MWhiteside Comp, and find the premiere of that film and watch it. Marisa and I will be online at the time to chat to anyone who wants to. So we'll be doing that chat at the side, so you can see the whole film as well as listen to the music at the same time.
So it's an online premiere?
Yes, it's the online premiere.
Okay, with you and Marisa introducing it or afterwards? Or
the way YouTube premieres can work is there's a chat box down the side, so you can chat to people while the premiere is happening or afterwards or still hang around in the chat room.
Right.
But it's the online premiere. The acoustic premiere happened in the Northern Ireland Science Festival in February 2018. But then after that, it won the Light Moves Festival of Screen Dance Innovative Use of Sound Award in Limerick, and then was subsequently screened as a film on its own right, as in the Dublin Dance Festival. Because Marisa, she started off as a dancer and then choreographer before moving into filmmaking.
Right.
So she comes to filmmaking from a choreographic standpoint.
Right.
So that's why it's a screen dance film is the way it's described, which is something I had not come across before I met her. Right. Which, like, we met in, I think it was 2016 actually, when I was doing a residency with a theatre company in Scotland, Magnetic North. She and I were on the Rough Mix residency together, which is a 2-week period somewhere in Scotland. They get six to eight artists of different disciplines together, stick them in a room. You all come with your own ideas and then develop them a little bit. But the cross-pollination within that environment was really interesting.
Right.
And Marisa and I hit it off, exchanging ideas, talking about physics, talking about dance, talking about a lot of stuff.
Right.
And so is the that's film, where it came from.
Is the film also called Entangled? Is that the title?
Yeah, Entangled's the whole kind of piece name.
Right.
Quartet number 4, subtitled Entangled, is the quartet name, but they're kind of all linked, so the piece can be performed as a string quartet and electronics and electronics on its own right.
Right.
It can be performed string quartet electronics with film, or the film, as has already happened, can be screened as a thing on its own.
Do you want to say something about the quartet? Are they which quartet is it that is used on this?
It was the Area Quartet, who both performed at the premiere and then recorded the rest of the album. They're a Manchester-based quartet, but I met half of them at least. Yeah, half of them at the moment, whenever I was doing my master's in the Royal Conservatoire of Scotland. So Abby and Christine, the cellist and viola player, were studying at the same time as me, and we got to know each other and then started working together. So the Array Quartet are also on my first album, Dichroic Light, performing my third string quartet, and Abby is also performing the title piece on that album, which is a piece for solo cello and electronics, which is also... Both Entangled, Dichroic Light, and a few other singles are on Apple Music, Spotify, etc., available basically everywhere online.
I'm quite intrigued in terms of how you work with a string quartet when electronics are involved, because obviously you have string quartets who all do, you know, standard classical repertoire, but when it comes to contemporary music and kind of working with a quartet, how do you go about doing it?
With this, there was a few rehearsal periods to try and develop stuff basically. So the very first time I came down to Manchester with a few few dots and MaxPatch. Max MSP is the software that I build the electronics within. And we experimented a little bit, played some stuff to see if it was working the way I'd hoped. And if it wasn't, how to make it work.
So you actually were collaborating with them in order to create the end music.
Yes, because I had a very clear idea of what I wanted the electronics to be doing. So on the I start all pieces handwritten. So on the handwritten draft, this five lines for this piece: violin 1, 2, viola, cello, and electronics. And the electronics is kind of a description to myself of what I want the electronics to be doing at that point. Mm. And then once I've written the piece, knowing that, I then go away, sit on Max and try and make the electronics do that. But you don't know whether they'll actually do that until you get the players in the room working with the electronics.
Right.
So the other added complication for Entangled is it's a piece that was written for 6-channel surround sound in its premiere form, which is totally doable within Sark. Sark is a glorious space. It's basically a black box, but with 40 speakers surrounding you. You've got 8 underneath you. You walk in the cattle grid, so there's 8 speakers underneath you. There's 8 around you. There's 8 at a kind of angle of about 45 degrees above you, and then one's right on the roof. And it's a diffusion studio, a space for...
Where is this again?
It's in Belfast.
Okay.
There's a similar one in Manchester, in Mantis, I think it's Manchester.
Is this a performing space?
Yes,
or a recording
it's a concert
space?
Hall. It's a concert hall.
A concert hall, but with speakers all underneath
yes.
you as well.
And it's designed, it was created for acoustic research. So the space itself can be, the resonance of the space can go from something like 0.2 seconds, milliseconds, or you can change it to being a 10-second reverberation, depending on how you set the room up and how you change the acoustic panelling. Hmm. So you can do a lot. There's a very, very flexible space as a concert venue, and then you have this added technology inside it.
Right.
But obviously I don't have a space myself where I can experiment with 6 speakers around me to see whether it works. So that required a little bit more development time whenever we had rehearsal time on the day in Sark.
Right.
So there were elements of
Is there no such space in London? Are these unique spaces?
They are custom built and they are not cheap.
Right.
Like some of the speakers, I think, I did my undergraduate in Queens in Belfast, so I got a tour around that space in Freshers Week and was told, I think, at least 10 of the speakers are about £20,000 each. So they're really not cheap.
Right.
And then the building, etc. So I'm not aware of a venue like that within London. I know of a few anechoic chambers, but they're not quite the same.
Right.
A lot of, I think, Goldsmiths has an electroacoustic department, I think, which does a lot of this kind of music, but sets the concert hall up to be an electroacoustic concert hall, so you move the speakers in. It's like whenever an orchestra does a Jonathan Harvey piece, for example, or Sarajevo piece, they bring in all the speakers and the equipment and set this room up to be a surround sound studio. But I don't think there's any space.
Does that allow for an audience of any size? I mean,
it was 150, I think, at the premiere, which was sold out. So it's a very big space.
Right.
And it allows for, it's built as a concert space. So they want audiences there with all these speakers around, with all the technology around.
So this must be quite an interesting experience for the audience to be getting a natural sound from a string quartet on the stage, but then other bits coming in at points they won't know when.
And having it surround you entirely.
Yeah.
So one of the performance aesthetics in electroacoustic music being music composed just in the studio for concert diffusion. Concert diffusion is in a space like that where you diffuse a stereo track over these 40-odd speakers. And the performance of it is, the performer sits behind the mixing desk and makes performance decisions of how the sound will move around the space. And that is a really, really interesting experience. So that's what I was doing during the premiere of the piece, as well as some of the planning around the speakers being pre-programmed as well.
Right.
So it was an interesting collaboration, then performance, and then quite technically challenging, I think, because I'd never done anything like that before.
All right, I should just say you're listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM. And we're talking to composer Matthew Whiteside and Naomi Belshaw from Wildcat PR, who is sort of escort. Well, what shall I say?
Escorting.
I almost used that. I stopped myself there after the word S. The word chaperone was going through my head.
I like to. Well, obviously, I'm helping set up lots of opportunities during this campaign, and then want to make sure that they go according to how we'd like them to go and in the best possible way. So I always like to come along and be a part of the. Yes,
absolutely.
Helping promote everything.
Yes, help
exactly.
Yeah. Make things happen.
Yes. As indeed it is happening here today.
Yeah. Indeed. Yeah. Indeed.
Right now.
All right. So just run me through again what's coming up. You've got something in February, have you? Did you mention some event or concert or something you wanted to mention that was forthcoming, or is it December?
The forthcoming thing is the 2nd of December,
right?
Which is the YouTube premiere at 8 p.m. UK time for the Entangled film.
Yeah.
Then next year I'll be in New York for a bit of time to work with a violin player, Pauline Kim Harris, on a new piece for violin and electronics, which she's going to tour some point toward the end of next year.
Right.
And I'm also going to be in Australia in August for the Australian premiere of a piece of mine as well.
Right.
So there's a few things on the cards.
Absolutely.
And more and more building, all being well.
Yeah.
Oh, also, that's the thing in January.
Right.
You kind of forget these things.
I knew there was something.
There was something in January. Quartet No. 6 and Entangled are being performed in the Royal Conservatoire of Scotland as part of their regular concert series on the 10th of January at 6 p.m.
Right.
Tickets aren't on sale yet for that, but they will be very, very soon if you look at the RCS box office. So you'll hear Quartet 6, which you haven't heard yet today, but I believe we're about to.
Shall we play? Where is that one?
It's
the very first track.
The piece we were talking about earlier on that's quite pertinent.
Yes, which is quite long, but that's fine. We can, shall we play that now?
Yes.
And then that'll give us a few minutes at the end.
Yeah.
Let me see if I can make this work.
So you'll hear this piece on the 10th of January along with Entangled and some other music around the programme, one which is a setting of a David Bowie piece.
Okay.
So in the background at the moment, it's still a little bit of Quartet Number 6, which, as I was saying before it played, you can hear on the 10th of January in Scotland. I live in Glasgow, so I'm just down today to do this radio show, so thank you very much for having me. But in Scotland, one of the other things I do is run a concert series called The Night With, which is putting what I say is interesting music into informal venues, which to me means contemporary classical music into basement venues of pubs. Hmm. This year's season is 25 concerts, which I didn't mean to do 25. I was expecting to do about 17, but it just kind of grew. So, but it's been quite cool. Next week, we've got the Hermes Experiment up, who are London-based and are nominated or shortlisted for an RPS award, which I'll see what happens with that at the end of next week. So they finish in Aberdeen with us on Thursday and then come back down to London on Friday for the awards. So hopefully, good luck to them. But if you're interested in around Scotland, on Monday we're doing a concert with them in the Hug and Pint in Glasgow. On Tuesday is in the Scottish Storytelling Centre in Edinburgh, and on Wednesday is the Belmont Film House in Aberdeen, performing a new piece by Matthew Gross, along with music by Anna Meredith, Meredith Monk, Emily Hall, Robin Haig and Josephine Stevenson. That's a lot of what I do in Scotland, as well as writing my own music and releasing albums. So this is my second album, Entangled, which please do go and check out, have a listen to on streaming platforms. Or if you want to buy the CD, it is available on Amazon and on Bandcamp. The links are all on my website. If you go to matthewwhiteside.co.uk, you can go to the Entangled website and find your way to various places to listen to it.
Okay. Well, thank you very much to Matthew Whiteside and Naomi Belshaw for coming in today.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Is there anything else we want to wind up with?
Listen to the album, come to the concerts, yeah. I think is the kind of takeaway message here.
Yeah. Yes.
There's also on my website, I was talking earlier on about self-releasing music. I've written a number of blog posts about how to do that from a classical perspective.
Yeah. Right.
So if anyone's interested in doing that,
yeah,
there's information on my website around that, links to distribution channels. And also I've blogged quite a lot about the process of recording and releasing Entangled, along with various bits and pieces of administration.
We definitely think that'd be great for the contemporary classical world to pay attention to, because it needs to move forward to how to self-release and how to go about starting things out. Because when people leave the conservatoire and things like that, you need to think a bit more about your business model, how to get your music out there.
Right. Okay. Well, we could play out with a short track. This is the ninth track on Entangled.
Yep.
Quartet Number 5. Is it, you could say Movement Number 3?
Yes, it's the third movement of Quartet Number 5.
Right. And can you describe this? Is there any particular technique used in this? Oh, you've used wind chimes, haven't you?
Wind chimes was. Wind chimes influenced Quartet Number 6.
Right.
Quartet Number 5 is very influenced by spectral composers. Thinking music, which is what I was talking about with Gilles Griset earlier on.
Right.
But this movement is the end of I think the whole quartet is about 18, 19 minutes long. So this is just a very long, slow build into a cadence that just finishes off the whole album.
Great. Well, thank you both very much for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks.
This program has been brought to you by Resonance 104.4 FM. If you liked what you heard and want to support our work, please make a donation at fundraiser.resonance.fm.